Hey everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of, well, I still don't know exactly what this show is called, but we're going to just go with the Dynamite Review Show, or the Rampage Rampo, but for Dynamite, or something like that. We'll get the name down pat. We're your hosts, I'm Boris, and I am joined by the one, the only, Dax Xavier. Dax, how's it going?
I'm okay, I'm just a little bit perplexed. Hey, as we speak, I'm actually looking at the new quote-unquote update for AEW Fight Forever, and it's there.
It's funny. We never actually talked about this.
We need to have the talk.
I think we do need to have this talk. It's We've been waiting. We've been avoiding it. You know, we've been George Costanza.
I would say avoiding it. It's just trying to find the right time.
Yeah. Exactly.
I've been talking about it on my platform like on a weekly basis.
I've been avoiding it. Fight Forever. And here's the thing. People, before anyone gets upset, before anyone says, oh, you guys are anti-AEW, number one, Exactly. Let's laugh right there. But specifically with this game, we praise this game. Dax.
We have it documented.
You have it documented. We can tell you.
TalkTimeLive.com. Go into my blog site. We did a review on there thoroughly when it first arrived.
And we both loved it. We both praised it. We were loving every second.
The potential of it.
Yeah. At the time, we were loving it. But then they did something that really upset us. And Dax, can you walk us through exactly what they did? Because this is something that you're seeing more and more with games, and it's something that, man,
the monetization practice and strategies is unbearable. You got people who spent, like myself, who spent $80 on the entire bundle, the first bundle, which consisted of like a slew of characters, extra characters, and that's it. And you know, for this base game, because, you know, and I get it, because THQ Nordic is trying to put the Aki engine safely in a new generational console, or consoles at that, and you want to make sure it doesn't overdo it like WWE 2K did. But it's what? It's December. It's been a few months now, and we've been looking for a lot of things, new features, new move sets, new creative features for the CAW, or creative wrestler, creative suite, I should just say. And we not only did not, we got little of that, and the little that we did, they're charging us for it. Stuff that should already be in the game. Stuff that when you compare it to WWE 2K, and I hate to give them credit right now, and it says it's more like 2K games more than the game itself, but when you look at the two base games, WWE 2K23, or even the ones iterations prior to, have fulfilled us with a standard amount of features, plays, match types, creative suites, all this stuff built into the base game. If you just spent $60, you get a lot. And then including this year, which you get not only just a cage match, you get Hell in a Cell, you get Elimination Chamber, and now you get War Games, along with up to eight eight-man tag. This game is charging you virtually the same amount of money and giving us very little. And I just don't understand, for a company working with another company which features a guy who is an avid gamer and is very aware of what's going on in the zeitgeist of the other gaming companies that are working wrestling games, I don't understand how they can justify charging $25 more to get a little bit of like another mode that should already be in the game, along with three characters, 37 new new movesets and you know, more skins and everything. Like, some of that stuff, I can see you charging, but not that much. Other things, it's like, should have already been in the game. Like, I don't understand the practice. I don't get it. I don't understand. Like, they know better. I yep. can't fathom who came up with this in a meeting and said, let's do this. This is a good idea.
Yeah, the monetization and the monetization practices of a lot of the entire video game industry is something that a lot of old school gamers, like, you know, people essentially between our ages, just some people accept it and some people don't. Some people who
it depends on what it is.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, you know, with this, you just cannot. You can't forgive this. Not that you can't forgive this. You can't accept this, right? Like, this one is kind of a kick in the balls.
It really is. It's not the AEW that we have known to love. This is not the AEW that really cared about his fan base. This is a total 180. And I'll credit you for this. You've said that, like, you know, we love this. We love the ride that we're going with AEW, but you never know the one day when things start to change and we start to question Tony Khan.
Look,
that has finally come.
I've been saying this from day zero, right? Like, it's just that's the unfortunate part. I've been saying this from day zero, and I'm not trying to, like,
the fact that you have to say it is sad.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be a smartass about that. It's the unfortunate part, and I hate the fact that I'm right about this. And it's not mm-hmm. just a video game, right? We're talking about the product. We're talking about just the way that the company handles itself. There's a lot of things right now that it's just like, it's a shame. And the worst part is, like, you're not even shocked or surprised or anything like that. But yeah, no, like let's stick to this game for now, because, like I said, you know, for those of you who did listen to the Rampage Ramble, we just love to shoot the shit and really geek out. And since we're both geeks, we both have geek podcasts, we both have geek platforms. So yeah, man, it's just it's a shame, right? It's a real shame, especially, like, in a time when entertainment dollars are so hard to come by, and anything that you
it's stretched thin.
Anyone that you or anything you do invest in, man, people should be grateful, right? Like it's what I always say. Like, man, it's just here we are. Video games. The entire video game industry, though, right now is just in a weird spot.
You know what it is too? I talk about this all the time. I've said it on this platform. I said it on my platform. It's time that fans stop thinking themselves as fans and gamers and start thinking themselves as consumers. We are finally seeing that.
Yep.
That is the one clear thing that I am so happy about, is that we're seeing more fans of these products, of this brands, becoming consumers and looking at their dollars. They're using critical thinking and they're looking at it as like, okay, I don't think this is worth the money that they're asking for.
Yep.
And wondering, what are you getting out of this? Like, all right, like you said, we grew up in different times. We grew up when we got a fighting game. The only way you get extra characters is if you unlock it within the game. There was no such thing as DLC. You had to beat a game to unlock another character.
Or,
you know, they are taking the naivete of today's gamer and juicing it forever. This is the same thing with Adobe. I spent $2,600 for the Adobe Master Suite back in the day. It gave me everything. Now they are charging you on a monthly basis. And guess what? They charge you more than what you would have already paid for the base pay. They're getting so much extra out of you. But because we're in a new generation of designers, they're taking advantage of the monetization factor of it. And they just, like, our generation is going to get washed over. So this new generation is not going to know that they could have got it for one base pay. And you know what I'm saying? There are times I still use the old, you know, the old programs too. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's crazy. But the gaming industry is doing that same practice. They're washing over the old gamers, but the old gamers are hard to get rid of. Like, you ain't getting rid of me anytime soon. I've been around since Pong.
Here's the thing, right? Number one, I cannot really talk about Adobe for work reasons, blah blah blah. I just need to say that mm-hmm. out loud. Now the other thing, though, is that it's common practice. I talk about this on the It's Canon podcast a lot, right? Like how everything is subscription-based. Everything now in business is turning into a something. And like when you're talking about accounting, when you're talking about things like that, and how successful your company is doing, especially when it comes to VCs, venture capitalists, like the people who pour billions of dollars into tech companies and companies alike.
Right.
They look at something that's called the monthly recurring revenue or the annual recurring revenue, ARR, MRR. You probably hear these terms a lot. And essentially, it's subscriptions. How much money does your company bring in each and every single month? So because they're looking at this at a monthly basis, you know, having a subscription where you can better guess how much money you're getting in, you can, for lack of a better terms, cook the books and make it look better than things are. And it's just that's how everything is. Everything is subscription based, right? It's every company right now takes a look at what services they can offer at the base price and then see how they can get you paying a monthly recurring price each and every single month.
So which is why you get those emails every single time or those texts.
Exactly, right? Cars, Teslas and electric cars, man, they're doing this. The practices that they're doing, we're going to do an episode of this on the It's Canon podcast soon. Like Tesla is going to start charging you for certain features of your car.
You mean after the callback?
Yeah.
They need to be doing a little bit.
Yeah. And even then, it's hilarious because people are like, it's not a callback. Just because, it's like, people are like, it's not a callback because it's a software update. Yes, the software update is going to fix a defect. That's still a callback. Just because you aren't getting,
you know, a recall of it best.
Back, yeah, exactly. You're not sending it back. Doesn't mean that it's not a
call. It's a virtual recall.
Exactly. Yeah. The industry that I'm in, it's a hell of an industry. Let me tell you that. I don't even know what companies I can or can't talk about sometimes. But hey. Adobe, I know, is one that I for sure cannot.
Unfortunately.
That knows what I'm doing right now. There's good thing we're not on video.
But nonetheless, let's go back to Fight Forever. And the idea is like, the slow pacing of this game and the development of this game is getting crazy. I'm saying that, but it's only been a few months, to be honest. But it's just, it makes you wonder. Remember, it just came out this year. It feels like forever. But it boggles me to, like, all right, they charge you for this. What else are they going to charge for? And we're already at season two, and there's only three characters in season two, plus there's this, you know, what is it? The storm is coming, whatever this is. I don't know if it's another story element to the story mode or whatever. I don't know. But we are still waiting for what we consider a base game. And we're not getting it. We just got a new update today. And I guess it fixes things. It's added it's adding so little each time. It's like they just, and I said they were going to do this, but I feel like now it's getting so slow. To the point, and I can't see myself paying for this DLC. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's where we're at.
And the Beat the Elite mode I hear is not that simple. Here's my thing about that. We got the Continental Classic already here. Love it so far. We'll talk about it. But in hindsight of that tournament going on right now, wouldn't have been obvious to just do a round robin mode.
Well,
that also would have made a lot of replay value in itself.
So
that you could customize your own characters in.
Yeah. Wow.
Something that was in Virtual Pro Wrestling 4. Virtual Pro 2.
Dax, you're forgetting something. I agree 100% and wholeheartedly with you. That would be amazing. The marketing around this would have been amazing if on December 20th, 21st, whatever fucking day it is, you know, you get the did. You download the update, and it's the Continental Classic. But there's something major that needs to happen in order for this to happen, and that is the product having a clear plan of where they want to go.
Very much. Very much. And it's just one of the things. It feels very convoluted right now.
It's one of the things that we've talked about AEW. We've talked about this on Rampage Ramble proper, right?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, where because of injuries, because of one reason, because of Tony just being overworked, I don't know what it is. This is one of the major things that defined AEW back then versus now. Back then, you always felt like they knew where they were going to go. You knew that they had a plan for 5, 6, 7, 8 months down the line. Right now,
when he just focused on AEW alone, it was so great. I mean, yeah. I wish he would go back and look back at what he did in the first 4 years to what he's doing now.
Yeah.
I honestly think he doesn't look back at it, what he's done. And I think that's a bad thing to do.
Yeah.
For anybody.
Yeah. Not just Tony Khan and AEW, just any company. But yeah, I think that's the major issue. And this is where, you know, a company, and I know you hate to give credit to them, but you have to give credit to them sometimes, and that's WWE, right? Where, you know, WWE would have been dead set on, okay, on this month, they're going to team up with 2K, they're going to release X feature, and because X feature is going to be featured on TV at this point.
We also did a review on that on Talk Time Live too, so you can you can check TalkTimeLive.com as well. So you can check that out. But I will say at this point, I don't hate to say this, but I'm gonna call it what it is. WWE is at this point the better game, and I don't think there's gonna be any change anytime soon in that because of what they provided, because of what they're able to do with it, and they patched it up amazingly since the last time we reviewed it. And talked about it. I recently went back to that game and I was like, oh, there's a lot of things that they fixed in this game that was obvious issues with it before. Like cosmetic visuals, all that stuff. It's playing much better than before. And I think I will give possibly AEW that credit because with them coming out with their game, probably gave 2K games a kick in the ass and was like, okay, we really need that because now we finally got competition after all these years. At least they thought they did.
It's so funny that you say this because this is something that's like up and down with WWE and AEW. WWE has gotten better on so many reasons, not only the product.
Because, but yeah,
the peripherals around the product because of AEW. And that's honestly, at the end of the day, I will always give AEW a lot of credit for at least raising the standard of the product that is WWE and things like that. It wasn't for that.
I just don't like the people who claim to forget that short attention society we live in who just all of a sudden like, yeah, WWE has always been like this. No, they have not.
Well, not.
Production-wise, yes.
Yes. Certain things.
We talk about the packaging versus what's inside the package.
Hey.
Always the packaging has always been awesome.
Yeah.
It's what's inside. It been all of a sudden we get people like WWE has always been on top. Like not in the first 4 years of the last four years or 5 years for this point, they haven't. They just now started getting back their momentum.
So yeah, let's geek out a little bit. I do want to ask you about Mortal Kombat 1.
I'll get you in it. Okay, all right, shoot. I didn't think that's where you were going, but go ahead.
What did you think I was going to ask about?
Leaks.
Sorry.
Leaks?
Oh. You know, honestly, it's funny that you didn't bring that up. I've avoided that. I've avoided the internet. Like the
plague. Here's the thing. I want to talk about that, but not talk. I want to talk about that, but not exactly like about that. I want to talk about it in a sense of moral and ethics, not what was leaked.
Yeah.
And I also want to bring up IGN as well, because they did some things that like, I thought was unethical from a journalistic standpoint, but let's talk about Mortal Kombat real quick.
You know what? Let's put a pin on Mortal Kombat because I was going to reference the whole us being consumer conversation, but let's talk about this leak. So what we're talking about is Insomniac. Insomniac is a video game publisher, distributor, they're essentially Sony. They're like they're partnered up with Sony like this. And then Insomniac has essentially had some major leaks, where the roadmap has been leaked, and a bunch of other vital key information that only internal people would know, should know, care to know.
Staff information as well, passports, all this stuff. Yeah. Like, it's been a lot.
That's the stuff that really bothers me, right? Like, one thing is the company, right? Why don't these hackers... Before we get into the actual leaks themselves, this is what gets to me about.
We're not going to go into details of the leaks because we are supporting all these companies who've been affected, and by doing that, we're not going to even talk about it. Unlike some other particular media outlet that we're going to mention as well.
With three letters. Here's the thing that gets to me about these hackers, right? And this is why hackers bother me, right? Okay, you guys are going to do your thing, hack into these big companies, do whatever it is that you want to do, ransom, or hold stuff ransom and stuff like that, blah, 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 blah. Man, how about you hack a bank and just like wipe out everyone's credit, right? Stuff like that. But no, you're targeting absolutely innocent people sometimes. People's jobs, people's livelihoods, people's this and that, right?
Yeah, art.
Yeah.
Can I make a theory?
Of course.
Of why they target this?
Of course.
Have you ever thought about the age demographic of the situation?
Oh, for sure.
100%. These are probably kids. These are probably kids that are behind the scenes of this. I forgot the name of the hacker group, but I think they're kids. I think these are just kids, because it's just weird that all of a sudden it's being targeted for Insomniac. And yeah, like you said, not other banks, not other things like that. They're targeting a video game, which means that is a demographic probably connected, and the target audience connected to that. To me, I think it's younger kids that are doing it. Like, what else? Why else would you do it? Now, there were some people, and I won't mention names on this platform, that has spoke out on this. Somebody who used to work for IGN, mind you, who used to do the very same thing that IGN just did, and just admitted and said that she was annoyed by it, but she admitted that she did it herself at one point. She said the same thing, but did it in a more derogatory way, to my opinion, and said, like, it's just video games. I'm like, no, it's not just video games. Video games is another art form. It's another art form that people take their time, years, skills, talents to put together to get people to enjoy things in life. Like what these guys did with Spider-Man 2 this year, warmed my heart. The same way that I would do watching looking at an art piece in a museum. It brought out the same emotions. It is a lot of work that went to these things. Don't dismiss it as just video games. You know, these guys work a hell of a lot of time, leave families because they got to put work into these things. And I don't have any beef with this person, because this person's extremely intelligent and understanding. She's a great student of the game. But sometimes she goes off the mouth and say some things that are just like.
Are we talking about, is this person Australian?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. You know, funny that you even say that. I just so happened to be online and just so happened to catch her live that night when literally she was talking about this and said this stuff. And I was just like, what?
I agree on some of the things she said. But like, also what I didn't hear was an apology from her either, because the situation of that was... She said that she admitted that she used to do that too. And what it comes down to, for those who don't know, IGN reported the situation, but they did so in a very dumb way. Like, they detailed, and I didn't look at it. I didn't read into it, but I noticed that they detailed everything that was breached. And I'm like, why would you do that? Why couldn't you just report it that they've been hacked? Why did you have to, like... Again, I question the demographics of that company and the people who are writing, and who was the editor that approved of that. And I'm thinking, like, why would they do this? So when I watched her, I noticed she said the same thing. And I was like, thank you. I thought I was the only one that was like that. That to me is just not a good idea. But then she also said that she did used to do it, too. And I understand. And I'm like, OK, then where's your apology to the video game industry and the developers that you screwed when leaks came out like that? Like, I heard that you said that you were part of it. I understand it. You know, I get it. But this is not right. It was like it was contradicting. It almost felt contradicting in a sense. And it was like, where's your apology to that? Yeah.
She's an interesting character, anyways, to begin with, right? I have nothing.
She makes good points. She makes great points.
Yeah.
At times, she knows her stuff. I will get at that, but I can't get any more deeper than that because it will be a whole thing.
But the fact that she admitted to doing some of these practices and doing this in the very past is very interesting, considering that she works for Santa Monica Studios, right?
Yes.
So,
it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing, but nonetheless. The fact that IGN, and they've been doing some question, they've always done some questionable things, but lately they've been doing some really questionable things just to get likes online.
So it's funny that you even bring up IGN. Now, I'm not trying to be on my high horse. I'm not trying. And I think I've told you this before, mm-hmm. but this always got to me. Basically, I would release my episodes of the It's Canon podcast on Sundays, right? Every mm-hmm. Sunday night, there would be an article literally about my topic du jour, which was a well-detailed, well-researched, heavy topic. Every single fucking week, my topic du jour, when it was about video games or something that IGN could pick up, one particular writer would literally always write an article about that very thing. And I called that person out on the show.
It is funny that you said that, because the same thing happened to me with comicbook.com. And during my old Facebook group that I had that got hacked, there was a few thousand members in there, and not all of them I knew. Of course, I can't know like a few thousand people, but I knew a core amount of people in the group that I would engage with, I actually socialize with. But I would have a topic on my show or something of that nature, or I would bring up something, and like, I'm not joking, that same thing would happen. And I would look at this article that pops up, and I would go like, is anybody in the group, in this group, using a profile that not admitting that they work for this company? Because this is really weird that this is coming out like this.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them do go into Facebook groups and they see topics and they want to jump on a bandwagon of those topics. And they leech.
Yeah. But it was like clockwork, almost clockwork. And there were mm-hmm. times where I put bullshit, and then this is how I caught, like, was 100% sure. And this, after this, I trapped this person. I added some bullshit information, and I actually said this on the show, not just once, a few times. And as it kept happening, and noticed that this person kept adding that bullshit information as part of their article, I ended up just calling that person out on the air. It stopped mm-hmm. about a month after that, but yeah, every
Lovely.
Sunday. Every single Sunday, literally hours after I published my show. And yeah.
That is lovely. Yeah, I'll tell you. He's so bad. It's just some of these platforms, I feel like, don't deserve to get the notoriety. And they get the notoriety basically off of just like clickbait type of things. Yeah, or hot take moments and everything. Bleeding Cool. It's not
you've,
like
you have literally yeah. described the business strategy of Bleeding Cool.
Bleeding Cool,
which is weird because I always say that site, but yeah.
You know what? You know, it's the other one. I will like negatively plug. We got this covered.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that. One of my rules in my old Facebook group was that no articles from that company will ever step foot in that group, because every single time they post something, get posted, nobody ever fact checks them. I remember Peter Jackson actually had to confront and say that like nothing of what they say is legit.
Yeah.
And there were other people there, like they're putting out articles, and their sources is that we have sources, but they don't say where the sources are from, or they don't say they're the only ones that are reporting this. And I've always said, if multiple platform credible sources are not reporting this, chances are it is not true.
Funny that you even say that, because the same could be said about the wrestling business.
Oh, yeah.
right? like, let's be honest there. All right, Dax. I think we've geeked out long enough. Let's talk about some professional wrestling. And as we talk about professional wrestling, let us focus in on AEW Dynamite, episode number 220 from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, at the Paycom Center. It was the holiday bash. And boy, oh boy, did we have a bash. Thoughts on the episode overall, my friend?
I am arguing whether this was the best in terms of the classic that we've seen to date. Like, I thought this was a great show. I thought this was absolutely great show. It was a very sports-centric show to me. And again, mostly focusing on the Continental Classic aspect. Like, I've really enjoyed the stories that are being told. I'm glad of the results of it. So I came off happy with this.
Yeah. A lot of people are complaining about AEW and the fact that they don't tell stories and it's random matches. Let's take a step back, right? Like, let's talk about this real quick. And I'm not saying that they're perfect at this. I'm not saying that they're great at this. But I think they've taken that criticism and they're trying to do something about it. We talked about this last week with the Continental Classic. The Continental Classic itself is telling some great stories within their respective gold and blue leagues. Mm-hmm. I'm loving some of these stories. We're going to touch on the gold leagues, shortly. So you have all those really cool stories. You take a look at Commander versus Roderick Strong. That match was set up last week. You have the women's Tony Storm and Riho, and that's been being set up for the past few weeks. And then there's the overarching Devil storyline, which, yeah, you might be bored of it. I'm bored of it. I don't give a shit about it. But that's a story that's
been happening just there
for so long. Yeah. So, you know, it's one of those things where I think that it's unfair to constantly criticize AEW. Having said that, it is good to criticize a company like AEW because, like, let's be honest, right? Like, that's the only way that these companies improve. Having said that, wrestling fans are wrestling fans, but it is what it is. But I did want to give them credit because, you know, it's something that I constantly see about their stories. And I'm not saying that these are perfect stories. Let me get that straight, right? Like, the devil stuff, I don't give a shit about this anymore. So that's such a convoluted story at this point that the payoff has to be perfection and then some for all of this to be worth it.
Yeah. Absolutely agreed. But in terms of just the overall show, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Do you drink coffee?
No, just chai.
What I thought.
Actually, you know, before Starbucks went on strike, I was starting to drink Frappuccinos and all the stuff.
Yeah,
I so do that's remember it. You that's that, as close, yeah. Right? But then they started screwing their company over and their employees over, and I was like, all right, I'm holding off on that for a bit. So
yeah, it's the reason just I ask is because I'm drinking my coffee here, it's just like I got this like bitter taste. I'm like, you know what? Have I ever seen Dex? Because we usually podcast in the morning.
You just answered the question as to why I don't drink coffee. I don't like the aftertaste. Never been a fan of the aftertaste. But Frappuccino, like the caramel crunch that I used to get, you never had that aftertaste, and it's really good. So it's like you still get the kick.
Yeah, you just buy $20 cupcakes from Starbucks now.
I don't even do that anymore because I used to go overboard. I was like Bleeding Gums Murphy on The Simpsons with the Fabergé eggs. You would see me in an alleyway just full of like cake pops. No, I ain't going through that again. I'm good.
Cake pops. I hate cake pops.
Why do you think I got therapy? Why do you think I got therapy now? It's all about the cake pops.
Oh, so funny. So funny. So yeah, so I agree with you. I think that this was a very, very good episode of Dynamite. The in-ring was great. The storytelling of the Continental Classic was phenomenal. And this is what I like about the G1. The G1, as you get closer to the end, like, you know, you get people playing spoilers when people are very close in points. It's like, oh my gosh, who's going to actually get there? And you're so invested in the individual matches like I was on this week's Dynamite, that it was just like, man, that was fun. I needed a cigarette after I watched the show at like 4 a.m. Like, rewatched the show because I did something really weird with this show last night. I did the Slam Report and I rewatched it just so I can like watch it like a fan.
Yeah,
because sometimes when I do like the full report or take notes, I noticed mm-hmm. that my opinion changes when I talk about it again or I watch a show again. So I'm getting into the habit of, now that I don't have to review like 1,000 shows, I can actually take the time to rewatch yeah. what I'm going to talk about.
That's what I well, my normal ritual is basically watching it the, like, I watch it live that day, but then the next week I'll rewatch it before I watch the new episode. So I could just, you know, recall everything that's going on and, you know, really appreciated it again and stuff like that. Or maybe even not notice some things that I missed to that measure. But yeah, I always watch at least twice.
I need a new boom arm. It's like, it's losing its flexibility, you know, like I move it and it's, yeah, it's like a laptop head. When that laptop head starts closing, you know, it's time for a new laptop.
And your camera's going down.
everything's just breaking here, including me.
But my wife watches football. I don't, you know, I watch with her because I'm there. No more, the same way to
sometimes. Yeah, a lot more than I like. Yeah, the whole football thing. I always thought like it.
Well, here's the thing. She just became a football fan too, so it's not deep.
I know.
She's still learning the ropes, but like I'll watch it too, just like she'll watch wrestling when I'm there, just like that. But I'm getting the same kick, sports-centric investment, watching the Continental Classic as she is too, you know, watching football.
Yeah.
You know, it is. It's really awesome. This is the part I used to grow up in wrestling, because it used to be portrayed as a sport more than a form of entertainment, depending on what you watch, you know. And back then it was, you know, NWA was the heavy, you know, bet of being more sports centric than WWF at the time. And just to get that feel, and I don't mind a little bit of the entertainment. I don't mind a little bit of entertainment, but let's go back into the ring. And that's supposed to be a competition. And with the Continental Classic here and the points system and everything, it really gets you in and invested. And then, like you said, like the stories that are being told, it's just, I am so immersed into this, man.
And honestly, you know what the biggest appeal of AEW for me has been for the past few months?
What's that?
Swerve Strickland. Everything he does.
Abso-freaking-lutely. I'm
so invested into Swerve Strickland right now. It is insane how much I love, appreciate, am happy for him.
Yes, absolutely. He's doing exactly what he knew he could do. And again, another thing that people don't give Tony credit for is that he really does give opportunities to people who really haven't, you know, gotten opportunities elsewhere. I mean, like, he's done that over the years. Has put weight on new talent. You know, even though we do see a lot of Edge and Christian lately and all the stuff, it's just a chapter in this moment, but we can't discount everything else that he's put in through years prior. Yep. And, you know, the people who got pushed 3 years prior, but, you know, you can't deny the ovation, the consideration in the fandom that is growing every single week. Like, you hear what they did with his music this week? Yeah. The crowd is adding on to his music and saying, swerve, swerve, swerve. And so now you hear the crowd is like going into the beat of the song. It is dope. Like, we're feeling this dude.
Yeah. And here's the thing. If you watched NXT... at that time, he was like one of the best things on NXT, especially at that time and place. And it sucked.
What was his name back then? It was Swerve something. Wasn't Strickland though?
Isaiah Swerve Scott.
Yes. Which was that his real name, or is that just a name that they fictitiously put in? Oh. But I don't think he ever got. I thought he was like another Ricochet character in that company at the time. They didn't really.
They did, and they no. They like, he started off as like one of those like, you know, I guess Ricochet.
And NXT, characters. Yes.
But then they kind of made him a little more important. He didn't get a long time on the main roster before his release, unfortunately. Right.
Yeah, that's the problem. That was the problem. That was the unfortunate.
It's interesting though, but Matt and I would always talk about how great this guy is, and mm-hmm. we always said like we were concerned for his future because we knew he was special, we knew he was good, but at the time with the powers that be, i.e. Vince and Bruce Pritchard having all the power, you just didn't know what they were gonna do with them. And honestly, him being released was probably the greatest thing to happen to his life and career.
I think he knew that too.
Oh, he does. Yeah. And he'll say that, right? He's the first person mm-hmm. to say that. I'm pretty sure he said that, right?
Yeah.
1990. God damn. Mm. Stephen Strickland.
He was born in 1990?
Yeah, born in 1990.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. 13 years younger. No, you're what are you? 70? You're 77.
77.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, when I heard that black just cracked for the first time. It's official. God. Hey, 1990?
1990.
Oh, my God.
That's, yeah, 1990.
Damn. Thanks, bro.
Kids. Three children.
Thanks, bro.
1.85 meters. Yeah. Swerf Strickland, the man, the myth. So yeah, going back to what we were saying, I just, I'm so invested in Swerve that it's very rare that, you know, unless you're a Mackenzie Mitchell or something like that, there is very rare that I will watch a wrestling show just for that person.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's been like that, man. It's been awesome. It's been an awesome road. I just hope they don't stop him. That was the beauty of watching this week's episode, because you know what happened with him and Mox. And with him going up against Roosh, you just didn't know how that was going to go. And I loved it because it was so unpredictable.
It's funny because the foregone conclusion when this Continental Classic started was that this was going to be Danielson's thing, right? Then as you're seeing the matches happen, it's like, oh, maybe Mox is going to do it. But all of a sudden, because of Swerve Strickland's performance at Full Gear against Hangman Page, and that entire mm-hmm. buildup and the setup and the star that he's becoming, honestly, what I'm really enjoying the most about the Continental Classic right now, at least in my mind, maybe this is how I'm justifying stuff, is that you just really don't know who's going to win. I now think that Swerve, it's Swerve's tournament to lose.
Yes, I agree. Absolutely. And I am so happy by what happened this week. So we got to talk about it.
They're going to talk about this week, because the reason why we're already gushing, ooing, and gaga-ing over this man is because he was part of the opening contest against... It's funny because, okay, so Dax is doing the Prince Nana dance, and I can see him in the peripheral because I have my notes up front and I have like a camera on the side, so I can only see the dance on my peripheral.
Big pressure's on my mind. I'm dancing all the time.
Oh, man. All right. Swerve Strickland versus the Roosh in a Continental Classic Gold League match.
All again, right, is this the first time?
I want to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This was, my God, these two. Go on. We'll talk about this.
This match was great, man. This match was so freaking good. It went 14 minutes, 50 seconds, and it was 14 minutes and 50 seconds of honestly two people just going back and forth. This was such a freaking great match, great freaking match, and Roosh controlled so much of this match. And this is the thing, right? Swerve is almost being booked like a babyface.
Yeah, you almost have to, especially compared to Roosh, because like I think fans they like Roosh, but they know Roosh. Yeah. And the one thing I love about this whole entire tournament is that Roosh does not come off like a bully in this tournament. Like, he bullies a lot of people. He's the people he's faced. He's not bullying. They are like, you come at me, I'm coming at you back. You getting receipts. And it's been happening all through the tournament. So he's like, I feel like this is humbling.
Yeah. Agreed 100%, man. This was so great. But yeah, Roosh controlled a lot of this match. He went to the outside quite a bit. But Swerve Strickland started targeting the legs of Roosh, slamming it to the steel steps. That was very cool, man. This was really, really, really good. Is there anything that you want to call out from this match?
I think because at first I didn't know how this was going to come out, because Roosh could have easily have won this match as well. You know, full force as he always does. It was when he started telling the story of his leg. It was like, oh, I see where this is going. I see how this is going to come at. And also, Roosh needs to learn. He needs to stop with pile drivers for a bit, because that pile driver, I texted you last night, I was like, that pile driver is not a Paul Orndorff style pile driver. He was, it was a little bit reckless.
Yeah.
But I feel like Swerve got him back with that double stomp, because it's the first time I've ever seen him double stomp anybody in the face.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
He usually misses the face. He did not miss the face.
Yeah. There were some receipts. Roosh has a lot of receipts that he's going to get from a lot of wrestlers. He goes for a senton. Swerve moves out of the way. He ends up hitting a beautiful looking 450 splash. Strickland keeps the attack going. He hits a flatliner and he does a beautiful looking brainbuster for a two count. He then does the house call and the nasty looking Swerve stomp for the win. Swerve Strickland wins.
Justified.
Justified. Continues his run in the Continental Classic. And what I love about this is now that Swerve is up, right, with the points, now you're like, oh man, this main event means so much. This main event
means
so freaking much. What's going to happen?
I think it really woke people up when they noticed, like, White. Yep. Exactly. And I was like, oh crap, this can turn into a three-way. Swerve can get his revenge back from Moxley at this point. Yep. So like, let's see how this turns out.
And that's the thing. Now you're so invested to watching the other matches in this tournament because you got to know, a man just got to know Dax.
And we are going.
we're going to know very soon. All right, we get a video package from Collision, which is nice because all 10 people who watch Collision, you know, it's good to know what happened. All right, then Chris Jericho talks about Kenny Omega. They talk about the future of the Golden Jets. Jericho says it's unclear how long Omega is going to be out of action for. He then says the plans aren't confirmed for their tag title shot at World's End, but Jericho stresses that the most important thing is Omega's health. He says everyone is pulling for Omega, and the Golden Jets will be back when Omega is back.
Man, I tell you what, we talked about it last week, that segment, and how he just felt like he was out of it. He legitimately was out of it for a reason now. Now we know.
Here's the thing, and this is why, like, I felt like an idiot, because I always say, we don't know what's happening, you know, step into the ring, blah, 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 blah. But man, now this makes so much sense, because Kenny just felt, or he looked like he was just on cloud nine, but not in the good way. Like, he just...
Did he wrestle? Like, he wrestled Ethan Page, like...
In Montreal,
on Ramp, weeks ago. On Collision. Yeah. Jesus. This dude, I mean, people, if you don't like him, you got to respect him. This is a guy, not only fights, unbeknownst to him, that he has diverticulitis. He's wrestled 5-star matches with Vertigo.
Yeah.
Did I mention
to you how painful diverticulitis is? No, we didn't talk about this yet. I've had it.
Are you serious?
I've luckily never had to have the surgery. Antibiotics has always done the trick. But man.
Yeah.
Your insides.
It's basically a hole in your intestines, right?
Yeah, it's diverticulitis is these lumps on your intestine that blow up.
Yeah, it's just from like you having a high protein diet or whatever. Or like you
honestly, some people are just susceptible to it. Honestly, I don't know what the cause of it is. The shitty part is that this is something that old people get. I would get this in my 20s, dude. I've had
shingles. But we're seeing it from younger people now. That's the crazy part.
Like shingles. I've had shingles.
How the hell twice. You get? What the hell?
Oh, dude, I don't know.
Jesus.
Yeah.
But even still, like, it's most notably, you know, if you watch Brock Lesnar's career, you know that, like, he's one of the first biggest, you know, stars to really have it. And I personally always thought that it affected his UFC run as champion. 100%. I always say he didn't lose that title to anybody else but diverticulitis. Because I honestly thought that dude was on a rampage. No pun intended. Going against ransacking people left and right. And then also diverticulitis, you know, took him. And it was Cain Velasquez that would just happen to be able to benefit from it.
And you have to be so careful after you recover from diverticulitis, right? There's certain foods you can't eat. You have to avoid, dude, I avoided rice. I avoided strawberries because of the small seeds.
Because it's acidic?
For so long. No, because of the seeds. You don't want these seeds to go into the polyps that are forming on your actual intestine. Dude, it's fucking rough. So that's why there's no timetable for his return. It can take 6 weeks. It can take 6 months. You just don't know how long a person's going to take to fully recover. It's fucking painful.
I wish him the best. Yeah. Like, you know, we say what he will about everything that he's done and didn't do, whatever like that. But like, this is a guy who's passionate about his craft, and, you know, being in a situation like that and not being able to do it, it sucks. So, you know, thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers.
Yep. Exactly. All right, let's move on to the next Gold League match. And this one, I like this match because this didn't have the intensity of oh man, what's going to happen? Like,
right.
This didn't have the ongoing ramifications to the tournament. But this was a match all about pride, all about, you know,
respect, honor.
I like that you used honor, because this honestly felt like old school Ring of Honor. Mark Briscoe versus Jay Lethal in a Continental Classic Gold League match. This match is a lot of fun. Again, this didn't have...
They looked like they were having fun.
Yeah, they did. They did. 100% they did. These two,
I felt like,
they have fun.
Yeah, they do. It shows that they're friends. You can tell they're friends. You can tell they enjoy each other. They trust each other. And by the end, Jay was proud.
Yeah. Just remember, Jay Lethal was the person that Mark Briscoe faced after Jay's death, right?
Right.
So.
Right. This was, I love, and the setup for it too was really good too. I don't know if you saw, was it Collision? I think I saw when they did the meetup with those two in the backstage, and they were talking about the, you know, let's just go out there and do our thing out of respect and all the stuff. And I love their camaraderie, regardless of the fact they have different views.
Yeah.
They still respect each other.
That's,
I feel like that's a world message.
Right. Yeah, so this was a fun match. A lot of one too many lethal injections for my liking. But that's what you're going to get in a Jay Lethal match. Briscoe was looking for a froggy bow. Lethal hits him in the back. He does a spike DDT for a two count. Briscoe comes right back with a Jay Driller for the win. After the match, both men shake hands.
You got to add one thing here. You missed the part when Jay Lethal hit Mark with a Jay Driller.
Yes, yes.
and tried to hit him back. But then also... something that I have not seen Mark Briscoe do in ages, and that's that burning hammer.
Yes.
He has his own, like, this is a move that he used to do when he was younger in Ring of Honor, and it was awesome. It was because he does it differently. He wraps his arm. Like, if you ever watch somebody do a burning hammer, it's a crazy devastating move, but he adds on to it. He takes your arm and wraps it around your neck and then drops you on your head from the side in a Death Valley driver. Like, wait, it is crazy. It's so effective. But then on top of that, he did the Jay Driller. So it was like he did both of their signature moves, him and his brother's signature moves together. I thought that was beautifully poetic.
Yep. Agreed. It was really well done. It's funny because, like, in my notes, I just have Death Valley driver. But you're right. It was the burning hammer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. There's a difference to those two.
Big difference. Big time difference, right?
Oh, yeah. I'd rather have the Death Valley driver for $500, Alex.
Great match. Both men shake hands. All right, after this, we get highlights of MJF getting into the Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. We get a
Wardlow
video package, and he says the payment for his sins cannot be delayed any longer, and he will bring the devil to his knees.
Can we stop right there for a sec? Of course. How are you with this Wardlow thing?
He sounds like a WWE character who is reading lines, and that's it.
On top of that, I agree. On top of that, it's just like he's been talking and talking and talking. And yeah, he wrestles a little bit, but he could have attacked MJF ages ago. He had his opportunity. He did not do it. It's just, it feels like it's dragging for what? And on top of that, of all that, he looks like Britney Spears' ex-boyfriend right now with that new hairstyle. Yeah, if you ever see... I was like, dude, that dude's in wrestling now? What the hell? Oh, that's Wardlow.
He also looks like Wheeler Yuta at times.
It changes on a week-to-week basis.
Yep. Depending on the light.
It's Seinfeld Two-Face thing.
Yeah. Oh, you're dating a two-face.
Exactly.
All right. We then get Samoa Joe. He's in the ring and he wants answers. Joe says that Roderick Strong made some good points last week. Joe questions how MJF was laid out a few weeks ago and calls MJF out. MJF comes to the ring and he reminds Joe that he said he would protect them prior to their match at World's End, but that didn't really happen. MJF then says that the Devil's henchmen didn't actually attack Joe. MJF says he doesn't trust Joe, and then he gets in Joe's face as he says they don't need to wait until World's End. I'm going to stop there for a second. So here's the thing, right? We just finished the Wardlow promo, and he's talking about sins and blah, 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 blah. He brings up the Devil, says he's going to bring the Devil to his knees. Then, again, you go back to this whole who is the Devil thing. This is what I mean. It's just so much. It's too
well said.
Freaking much at this point, right?
I agree. I think that was so... That was just wrongly set up.
It's just too much at this point, right? It's almost turning into a convoluted storyline.
Which is why the payoff, like you said, the payoff's gonna have to be big in order for us to just overlook all that.
Mm-hmm. Some masked men charge the ring. MJF and Joe fight them off. The lights go out. The Devil appears on the screen, and we get a message from him. The message is a challenge to MJF for him to defend the ROH World Tag Team Championships. MJF and Joe accept.
And I thought this was the Dark Order, 2.0 at this point. Because it was so many people in masks and everything coming out, everything. It just reminded me of that when the Dark Order, took down the Elite at the time.
At Holiday Bash a few years ago when, the infamous...
Before Brody Lee premiered. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Backstage, Renee Paquette is with best friends Chris Statlander and Rocky Romero. They announced that Chuck Taylor is injured, so he's out. A lot of stuff happened. Orange Cassidy agrees to face Rocky Romero on Rampage.
It was funny, but I thought it was cute and funny. But I thought they were just it was Roppongi Vice going to be teaming up again and doing something. Because that's what I thought he was going into. And then, that just happened. It just out of the blue. And, Rocky's that wasn't what I was meaning to. Okay. this should be a really fun match, though.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a good match. It just seems very random. But, again, I get to the point of what I said earlier, right? It's not some random match that you're going to be getting, right? There is a challenge, and the challenge was accepted. Boom. Storyline. Is it the best? No. But it does kind of satisfy the requirement in a something that a lot of people have said, a criticism of AEW, I should say.
Which I think is unwarranted. I think it depends on who you're... Yes, I think depending on who you're hearing it from, and not everybody holds merit to their criticisms, mind you, because a lot of it stems from having a short attention span and not being able to remember a lot of things that has happened prior to, and also people who can't read past 240 characters.
Mm, yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. All right. We have an AEW Women's World Championship number one contenders match, Saraya versus Riho. Tony Storm is on commentary, and once again, Tony Storm steals the show while she's
freaking love her.
Right?
Look, some have said that it's known that RJ City had a lot to do with her new persona, I hate to say gimmick, but her new persona, if you will. Even if it is, and be that as it may, she still has to do the role. She still has to be able to execute it. And the amount of conviction that she puts in and the commitment that she puts in, you can't practice that. You cannot practice that. She has to have a particular amount of conviction to be able to pull that off. And she, Carol Burnett has not left this world yet. But I feel like she's borrowing the spirit of Carol Burnett. It is so much, and I know a lot of people of younger demographics don't know that name. Know who Carol Burnett is and why she is a genius in comedy. Feel like Toni Storm has taken a little bit from that, and gratefully so.
Go YouTube Carol Burnett impersonating Cher while Cher's impersonating Carol Burnett. That's all you need to YouTube.
The woman is a legend. She is one of the greatest of all time. for a reason. And trust me, even today, if you watch our show, you will be cracking the hell up, especially if Harvey Korman and Tim Conway is involved.
Yes, 100%. 100%. Yep.
Them trying not to make each other laugh and break character is the best. That's what Tony Storm to me reminds me of right now. And that's saying that to even say the word Carol Burnett in reference to what she's doing is a huge compliment.
The only issue, and this isn't even a criticism. The only issue is that Tony Storm steals the scene anytime that she's around. So a match like Saraya versus Riho, it's like kind of secondary.
Yeah, it really is. But that's not taken away from what they did in this match. I really enjoyed this match. I would like to also give credit. This is the best use of Luther ever in AEW right now.
The way he just carries
perfect.
Her around.
It is awesome. Just everything about it. But I digress. We digress. Let's talk about this match.
Got one of those post-concussion headaches all of a sudden. You just want to like dig your eye right out. So do you want to talk about this match while I...
Yeah, basic. I mean, it's your basic Riho type of match. But I think the fact that Saraya is a veteran, she was able to absolutely take on this match and make it convincing. And a lot of times, Riho has, you know, wrestled with a range of people who need to be, you know, where she needs to ring general them and direct them. She didn't have to do this. They worked together. I thought their chemistry was really great. Saraya has worked with people from around the world, and it played off of a great match. It was very convincing. I thought this is actually one of my, and like, this is always a great Riho match, but I think this was one of my more enjoyable Saraya matches in AEW.
Yeah, here's the thing, right? And like, there's no disrespect to anyone on the roster, but I just find that Saraya does better when she wrestles someone who with a lot more experience.
Yeah, agreed. Absolutely. She's not like, I mean, she's not a Bryan Danielson in a sense that like he can wrestle, make everybody look good, and then he can really work with anybody in that case. She gels with people who could gel with her. She's on a pace that she's not willing to step down on that pace.
Yep. Rio's tiger faint kicks are always great. Her Northern Lights suplex bridge is always awesome.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Finesse. Man.
Really good stuff. Riho hits at
the. I like the way that Saraya was able to. She was able to work with Saraya's arsenal as well. Like those knees, she didn't have. You know, Saraya didn't have to pull punches on the knees. It just felt like they really hit right and everything. It didn't feel like a pillow fight at all. I love that. It was a really great fun match.
Yep, Riho with a double stomp followed by a charging double knee for the win. Ruby Soho was seen smiling while watching the TV from the side.
Storyline progression. What do you think?
Crazy thought.
And then we also see, Timeless get carried down to the ring as she's
pointing. Literally, I was about to say that we saw the funniest thing is Luther just carrying Tony Storm down to the ring. Her and Riho fight. Riho gets the upper hand with a tiger fang kick. Mariah May then blindsides Riho with Tony Storm's title. But the beauty here, planting the seeds of story, is did you notice the way that Mariah May always looks at the title?
Yep. You know what that reminds me of too? Samoa Joe. If you go back to Ring of Honor 2003, he used to be with Christopher Daniels' group, The Prophecy.
Yes.
And they used him as a mercenary against Low Ki to take out Low Ki. That's how he first premiered. That was the debut of I forgot the name because I was there when he debuted, and they hired him as a mercenary to take out Low Ki, and he ended up teaming with the Prophecy. But when they did promos, Samoa Joe would be in the back as, you know, Christopher Daniels is doing these promos, and he's making these stupid faces like he's not paying him any attention. He's not taking him seriously or whatnot. He's just doing his own thing. So we knew that he was on his own. I'm feeling that type of thing with Mariah here.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just a matter of time.
It's a matter of time. We all know what's coming, but I think that, it's going to be good when it does happen. I'm liking this story. I really, really am, to be 100% honest. And again, storyline progression. Look, I know we're beating this over the head, but I'm trying to get the fact that, look, they have listened and they are trying to tell stories through and through.
I mean, what is they trying, though, Boris? They've always been telling stories.
Not always. Here's the thing, though.
I mean,
like, if if you're not picking up what they're putting down, that's on you, not on them.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That great point. I mean, it's not consistent, but if we go back into the beginning in 2019, there have been stories.
No.
And course, strong but, stories at that.
No, but I'm saying, like, the argument is that they've stopped. They've stopped, and it's been more randomness. And it's
well, true. It hasn't been as strong. I would say it's not been as strong as what they used to.
Yeah.
And I would say between those little storylines and then the Continental Classic, it's starting. We're seeing a little bit of strengthening.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm pointing. Yeah, anyways, everyone knows what I'm doing. Tony Schiavone reads a statement from TNT champion Christian Cage. Cage says that he has taken Nick Wayne on a vacation, on a father-son vacation. Cage then says that he will address Adam Copeland's challenge this Saturday on Collision.
I think they also, hopefully, they'll interview the mom as well. I think that's something that should be done.
I think so.
We need to know where her head is at, because even when she did do the job, it just seemed like it wasn't with conviction. It just seemed like she was still confused, as, you know, she didn't want to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Backstage, MJF argues with Samoa Joe. MJF finds a mask from a goon outside of Mogul Embassy's locker room. Prince Nana comes out. MJF grabs him and yells at him. Swerve Strickland is out and gets in MJF's face. Strickland says that MJF has been dodging him. MJF makes fun of Swerve's theme song. MJF says he is proud of Swerve, but he hasn't been avoiding him. MJF then tells Swerve he's not on his level and calls him a whiny bitch. Swerve tells MJF to be careful. MJF says Swerve should watch his mouth. MJF then threatens to blow Swerve's house down. Mogul Embassy is there, but Samoa Joe shows up as backup. So this is another example, in my opinion, of they're just trying to take us in too many turns with this angle.
With that said, I did enjoy this angle. I did enjoy the segment.
Yes.
I love the back and forth of the two. It was setting up something for those two in the future, but it also set up Samoa Joe and Swerve. If you look at the eye contact that those two had, it was like, oh, you will be dealing with me in the future. So we'll see. And I love the eye contact, because that was like nonverbal communication to me in that sense. So I was like, okay. Because, I mean, coming from around the way like I do, if you look at somebody like that, that's setting a tone. I'm like, all right, you trying to see me. I see what you're trying to do, bro. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll see you later.
Yep. Again, planting seeds.
Mm-hmm. Eye contact speaks volumes.
It really does. What is it? 90% of communication is nonverbal.
Yep. And in this case, it was like, okay, he set a tone. He's stepping back, but Samoa Joe did not take his eye off of Swerve, and Swerve didn't take his eye off of him. It was like, yo, it doesn't matter. Even you or you, y'all can see me on site. What?
Yeah. All right. Let us get to the next match of the night, which was Roderick Strong with the Kingdom versus Commander with a K with Alex Abrahantes.
What I'm seeing is evolution from Commander, and I'm loving it every single time. He was a guy that, like, he wasn't as bad as Gravity, but he was still learning the case, and he's just gotten better and better with every person that he's in the ring with. And every person that he's been in the ring with has been some top quality guys. And I'm loving it. I'm enjoying his matches. And Roger Strong, you really can't go wrong. Like, you just can't.
Hijo de Blanquino needs to learn to be a little more tranquilo sometimes, because, this match was very good. And, like, you know, just like Canyon, who better to be in the ring with than Roddy Strong?
He just doesn't. I've never seen I think there has been one bad Roderick Strong match, but I don't know if it was his fault, but I rarely see a bad Roderick Strong match. And I've seen a lot of Roderick Strong matches, both in, you know, live and in on, you know, TV.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Yeah, same here. I'm trying to think. Every Roddy Strong match that I've seen live has been damn good.
Even his jobber matches have been awesome. Okay.
This match was a lot of fun. Obviously, the Kingdom gets involved. This allows Roddy Strong to hit a end of heartache for the win.
Yeah. Great, solid match. Really fun, solid match from both. It was just great.
Like you said, you bring up a great point, though. It's something that it didn't click until you said it. And that's Commander has really taken a step back from trying to be this showboat of a guy to having good matches in-ring with people.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like you see all the recent people that he's been in the ring with. I think he's assimilated, if you will, and adapted to that. And he's actually learning. He's pacing.
What is this, the Borg? Oh, man. After the match, Roderick Strong says to Rene Paquette that it's obvious that MJF is a devil and tells Samoa Joe to wake up. Strong then says Joe is his best friend via proxy.
That right there. Like
that one. Like he always throws that one line, that one something that just gets you.
You know what's funny? Commander and Roderick Strong do have a lot in common in a sense, like where Roderick Strong's once weakness was his promos, was his persona. He was a extremely strong in-ring technician. But when it came down to actually showing his own personality, he had a hard time doing that for a very long time. And then on top of that, he didn't have the voice to carry it. Somehow, some way, he managed to find his niche to, you know, create, you know, to balancing that voice of his and pitching it in a way that, like, he's kind of like the Archie character. He's kind of like the Riverdale Archie type of dude. And you, how do you bring that into wrestling? And he found his way to somehow do it. And I love his persona. His persona is catching up to his ring style.
Yep. I would like to say that between the years of 2016 and 2021 is when Roderick Strong was able to develop great mic skills. Oh, I'm just looking. Yeah, that's when he was in WWE. You know, I've always said this about Bryan Danielson. Bryan Danielson, as you know, we've seen his career from the get-go. Amazing in-ring. Regardless of where he was so good in-ring. But he was never able to just talk and get that character across. But his time in WWE just freaking turned him into the superstar that he is.
I would definitely say it. I will give him credit on that note. It did elevate him to another level. I will say that he was a great heel.
Yes.
In ROH.
Here's the thing, though.
When he really was shooting out the best of the world gimmick.
Here's the thing about anyone who I say when they are in WWE and they develop these mic skills, not that WWE teaches these mic skills to people, they teach how to use them, but these people are naturally gifted.
Yes. I think the idea is that the production quality of WWE plays a factor, and it's because they have to learn how to be at know where the camera is and know how to talk at a certain segment. So there is a style that is great in WWE for production, and I think that helps anybody greatly because it's a high production value that you don't get anywhere else, and that is, you can never take that away. You got to give WWE credit for that.
And all that stuff, right? Like, unfortunately, fortunately, whatever way you want to see it, wrestling is secondary to WWE.
Yeah, it really is. There's nothing to take away from that. Like, they can get away with just having some guy with only one move get over. Like, it's amazing. The art of smoke and mirrors is WWE sometime.
Look, if I can get paid millions of dollars for doing three moves every five minutes into the match and call it a night, my God, the power to you.
Agreed.
Continental Classic Gold League match, John Moxley versus Jay White. So many repercussions on the winner of this match.
Yes.
We also have Swerve Strickland waiting in the wings, quite literally. Most importantly, and I think the biggest takeaway of this match is the fact that Jim Ross is back and he called this match.
Sounded very clean, healthy.
Yeah, he did. This is the best he sounded health wise in so long.
He sounded almost dare I say attitude era. Like the energy in him during it. I paid attention to him. Like he is not sounded tired at all through this entire time. I'm so happy he's feeling better and sounding better.
Yep. what's interesting about this match, and maybe you can help me dissect this part of like the thought process. Mm-hmm. And as Jay White essentially tries to avoid John Moxley throughout the match, he's playing mind games with him throughout the entire match. He doesn't really, I think this is what it is, and agree or disagree with me, and this is again why this match was really good, was Jay White knows that he cannot go toe to toe with John Moxley.
Yeah. On top of that, Moxley was trying to end it very quickly because he knew the situation. He knew the repercussions. There was a lot of psychology in this match.
There was.
Moxley normally is like, I don't want to say he paces, but he takes his time to really, beast the living crap out of his size. This time he knew the repercussions. He wanted to end this match very quickly. And because he also giving respect to Jay White too. Because he knew if he lingers a little bit too long, he knows Jay White is going to find a way to. And we did see that in this match.
We literally saw that, right? And I love this because as Jay White tries to avoid
Styles John makes Moxley, fights.
Yeah, as Jay White tries to avoid John Moxley follows him. They fight up the ramp. There was a back body drop on the ramp. Jay White again avoids John Moxley. He kind of is able to get some offense as he tries to avoid him. Like I say, because John Moxley is so focused.
Can we also add that he also had an injury too that we was playing? That's one of the reasons why I think that he was trying to end it soon.
Yeah. Yes. Go ahead. You can bring up that point.
Yes. We learned that John Moxley has a leg injury. And part of the reason I think he was trying to end it soon and just take him out really quick was because of that injury. Because if he lingered too long and if Jay White started noticing that injury, he was going to emphasize on it. And we've seen that that's exactly what happened.
Yep. Jay White continues to try to avoid Mox. They're outside of the ring. Mox goes for the chair. Ref grabs a chair. White throws a chair into the ring. The ref sees this. He's like, WTF, mate. He grabs the chair, but White eventually grabs a chair and hits Moxley with it. A little while after that, Moxley comes back, hits a paradigm shift for a two count. And then we see White really focus on the leg. He hits a dragon screw on the injured leg. But Moxley isn't down and out for too long because he comes back. He hits a fucking devastating knee to White's face. White mm-hmm. gets a sleeper suplex on Moxley. Then he does a Kiwi Crusher for a two count. But Moxley comes right back with a fucking just insane looking lariat. Oh,
that was beautiful. Yeah. Talk about just using all your energy. Good.
But White comes back. He goes for a Blade Runner. Moxley evades it and he stomps White. But that wasn't enough. Mox can't keep up. And White hits the Blade Runner for the win. Swerve Strickland comes out and he just stares down White. White then just attacks the injured leg of Moxley and walks away.
Mind you, also, we should note that he beat Moxley in almost exactly 15 minutes. When they were just about to say the 15-minute mark, he took him out.
It was.
And that was amazing.
Let me check my notes.
What was the time?
15:05. The count is the reason why they didn't announce 15.
The announcers did. The commentators did, yeah, but the announcer didn't. Yeah, definitely. And I was like, whoa. And again, it was one of those things just came out of nowhere. It reminded me of Roosh when he took out Jay Lethal really quick. They built in the idea that you never know how these matches are going to end within the amount of 20 minutes. The only thing that we have not seen was a draw where one person gets one point each. But other than that, you never knew how these were going to end. And they all ended. Or who is going to win? You could go back and watch every one of these matches. And this is the part I love and why I enjoyed this so much. And why I think this is possibly, arguably, maybe the best tournament they've ever done. Is because you could look back at all these matches and not either one is the same. And it was just beautifully, beautifully orchestrated.
So here are my wrap-up notes. Because I think mm-hmm. about stuff before I write my report for Slam Wrestling, which you can go at slamwrestling.net. And that's this tournament has really helped not only with the storytelling of each show, they've also had you wanting to watch both or all three shows, Dynamite, Rampage, and Collision, because you want to see what's going on within the leagues.
Yeah.
But one of the biggest complaints that people have had about Dynamite was that it's a nonstop show, that they throw so much and they don't let things breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the tournament, the pacing of the shows have been so much better lately.
Yes, I agree. Almost to the point, like, I wish they just keep doing these over and over again. But here's my question for you, because you watch G1 more than I've ever had. First of all, two questions here. Which league did you like better? Are you digging the gold side or the blue side? Sound like I'm talking about X-Men, by the way.
Kind of, right? X-Men gold. X-Men
it's like
gold,
X-Men 90s.
X-Men whatever.
Exactly.
I'm all about the gold league because of Swerve, dude. I'm just loving what Swerve is doing. I'm liking the blue league as well, because you got the whole Bryan Danielson through story with his eye injury, right? And then we have the
match. And just so Eddie Kingston.
The whole Eddie Kingston stuff. The Eddie Kingston stuff is interesting because, like, everyone's forgotten that the fact that he just lost his ROH title just like that. No one's talked about that yet.
He may still have a case in this.
You're right. Actually, you bring up a great point. Now, the Bryan Danielson thing for me is you have the match at Collision against Claudio Castagnoli. Oh, that's going to be a freaking great match, not only because of the competitors, but because of the story.
And they're teammates, but they knew that this was going to happen. And I like it. This is very MMA-like, to be honest. This is like you got an MMA team that are both going to be facing each other. You're like, you know, they're in the same teams and everything, but they're in the same weight classes, and they're going to be facing each other. This is like, you know, this is a... This reminds me of Jackson's camp back in the day. It's like you got John Jones, but John Jones got somebody else in that camp. So that camp got to move out to train under somebody else or whatever like that, because they're going to be facing each other. So I dig the, again, this is very sports centric. I dig this a lot.
Yeah. Man. Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. I'm really liking this stuff. I'm really enjoying this stuff. Any final thoughts before we ramble a little bit?
End the show? Here's my other question. Question. You watch G1, more than I ever could, and fully, mind you. How do you fare that this is going in comparison to the New Japan Pro Wrestling G1?
Look, the G1, whoa, I just blasted the mic, sorry, for anyone's ears. The G1 over the past few years has been too many people. I think the G1 is too big. What I really enjoy about this is that it's just, you know, the two groups, and the two groups are very small. You have the 12 wrestlers, and that is it, right? G1 is like so many wrestlers at this point. What I'm enjoying is the smallness of it, and it's easy to follow, and you get some really good stories out of this, because not only are you having great stories being told within the tournament, but I feel like they've planted the seeds for a lot of feuds for after the tournament as well. Like,
absolutely.
Bryan Danielson going to get his revenge on Andrade El Idolo, right? Things like that.
You also got... You know, is Eddie still going to come out of this champion? Like, he has one more chance to get to be able to.
I wish that they would push that story a little more. I feel like that story is.
I think they really should have. Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. Like, Swerve is taking over our entire, this entire tournament, because he's the proverbial dark horse, if you will, that we didn't even think about actually. I mean, we knew he was in here, but like now, his persona, his story, his conviction, it's growing so massive. Like, even if he wasn't planning to be the winner, what are you going to do? If I'm Tony Khan booking this right now, like, what are you doing? Are you going to drop the ball on this?
I hope not. That's the thing, right? We're on the final stretch. We have just 10 days left of this tournament. Let's not fuck this up at this point.
Especially considering like everything that has happened in the last few months with AEW, they need a win. And I don't know, man. Putting money on Swerve right now is a big win. And it also tells you that you're really pushing talent that really has earned the right to be in the position that they are.
Look, right, like a couple weeks ago on the main show, I was talking about the fact with Eric B that, look, WWE is making a very compelling argument to AEW talent that, hey, you can come here and we're going to push you. Look at Jade Cargill. Yeah, she's not on TV, but she looks like a superstar anytime she appears on TV. You got Cody Rhodes doing what Cody Rhodes is doing. You have Lexus King / Brian Pillman Jr., who just seems like he's finally has a purpose in the world of professional wrestling. And then you have someone like a CM Punk, right? But that's whatever. It is what it is with CM Punk, right? But, you know, I think what you just said is a great counter argument where, you know, if you're in AEW, you will have your chance. We're going to give you a chance regardless, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, again, this competition goes both ways now. The same way that AEW has helped WWE, I think WWE improving so much is forcing AEW to stay on their
toes. It's a reverse now.
Yeah.
It's a reverse now. And, you know, AEW, I think, is in a situation where WWE was once when it came to WCW. Let's book the younger talent and elevate them. You know, let's still have the established people, but let's elevate these guys and really do something. You know, he has to be the Shawn Michaels.
But the problem with WCW doing this is that WCW was great at doing that for a while. But then with the cruiserweight division, it was what's next. There was no graduation from that cruiserweight division, right?
He never could get that together.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see, but so far so good. I'm digging it.
Yep, 100%. Dax, all right. So, man, I have a busy, busy day because right after this, I'm going to start tabulating the results for the best and the worst of 2023. Later on tonight, we are recording the both shows, the best and the worst. The best is going to be coming out this weekend. The worst is going to be coming out next weekend. We're going to try to...
The annuals. This is one of my favorite episodes of the year for Sunday night's main event.
Look at those graphics. Beauty. Look at those graphics.
Wait. Oh, you're using Design. Nice choice of program.
I use Affinity. Yeah, I use Affinity.
Affinity is awesome, and it's one price. Can I mind you?
Yep.
So I want to advertise, but you know, great choice. Let's just say great choice.
Our episode has gone full circle because if you remember what I said about Adobe,
that's what I was like. I'm not trying to. I didn't want to say the name either, but it was like I use that a lot. Yeah, I use both,
I love this though. I love this one. Affinity has released a photo editing application.
I have them all. I got it all.
Dude,
all of my graphics, mostly on my iPad that I do for my show, is done by Affinity. Same. And then every once in a while, I do go on to, and especially this recent Adobe, because they do have some really cool things.
They do.
But I'll just stick it there. I use both.
All right. Yes. So where can we find your wonderful work in the world of video games, movies, anime, and so much more?
Well, let me tell you, aside from doing this show with you, this brother's taking a break for the holidays.
Thank you.
Yes. I do this every year, but I am also preparing the best of 2023 for all things anime, comics, movies, and games. And it's a lot to celebrate this year. So it's going to be, I narrowed down to probably some of the top five that I have enjoyed. And again, when I do a top five, it's not the top five of all time. It's the top of my time. So everybody has their own. This is going to be mine. And, it's going to be interesting to see where I go. And by the way, it's unfortunate I'm going on vacation because I'm going to see Aquaman tomorrow. So I want to see how that turns out. Iron Claw has already come and gone. I was able to do a review of that, but I will be putting up some, what I call Talk Time Live Rewind episodes of past interviews that didn't make it onto the platform that I upload on. So if you're a Naruto fan, I will have the one and only Tom Gibbous on, who is the voice of Shikamaru Naru on air. And a great interview that I had with him in 2019, if I'm correct. So it was the first time I talked to him before I did the whole entire cast of Naruto panel. And you get to learn about a lot more of his role as that character on there. And, you know, his work with Dick Clark, of all things. And you know, him doing some things up in his acting career. So that will be up this week on TalkTimeLive.com. where you can also check out all of our other archive audio episodes and video exclusives. And there as well, some blog entertainment stuff. ACMG Presents Talk Time Live is the premier podcast that, you know, covers all things anime, comics, movies, and games. So you can check it out there. Also, Bob Camp. I'm the co-creator of Ren and Stimpy. I'm going to throw that one up too this week because I didn't make it somehow. So there's all those and much more on TalkTimeLive.com, folks.
Yeah, that's what I do with It's Canon, right? I just haven't had the time to do that. But because of the accident, I haven't been just physically able to do It's Canon, to be 100% honest.
Yeah, take as much time as possible, exactly. Man. You're popping headaches out of the blue. No.
Yeah.
You need to rest.
Exactly. And I do enough with SNME, right? So for me, yeah. I can only do so much. It's something that I've learned. It's something that you've preached to me. It's something that a lot of people have preached to me, and it's something that I'm really trying to
take. It's something that my therapist has to make sure that I'm not doing myself. So I'm piggybacking off of my therapist to you.
Yeah.
Don't overdo it.
Exactly. What else? So this week, Friday, today's Thursday, yeah, Friday, I'm actually going to be releasing the full interview that I did with Kevin Von Erich earlier this year.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Appropriate.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I'm like, hey, I was only able to use 10 minutes of this interview. Let me release all 40.
How about you probably did a lot better with him than AEW did with him?
My God, that still bothers
me. That's a whole nother story.
That still bothers me so much. It's like, how do you not capitalize on that?
Not one mention. The association with that movie to AEW, you would have thought. This is the part where WWE gets credit.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to be releasing that. It's 40 minutes. There's a really funny Boris. There's a really funny Boris story in that, and he just loved it. He laughed so much at this, but I think it made the final cut. I have to listen to the full interview again, which is weird because like the quality on this interview is the reason why I didn't want to use too much because it was via cell phone. He was on his cell phone in Hawaii when we did this.
Okay. Hey, you know, you hope to get the best quality out of people, which is why I do live interviewing actors because they make sure that they always have great voice actors, especially. They always make sure they have great quality. But as long as your quality is good, you kind of go with the you work with what you got with the guest.
Yeah. Streamers also have great quality. Like they make sure that everything is working fine.
Absolutely. But God bless everybody who comes on the show.
Yeah, of course. Oh, 100%. That's why I love Chris Van Vliet. Like, Chris Van Vliet, he even sets up his lights.
And come on, man. He worked in media. He worked in the news. You think he's going to come? He of all people, like, you don't have to worry. He's going to be 8K to your 4K.
He sent me a text yesterday that made me laugh so much. He's like, Boris, guess who I'm interviewing right now? I'm like, I don't know. Who are you interviewing right now? And he's like, the hardest working reporter in all of pro wrestling. I'm like, you bastard. Mackenzie Mitchell.
Oh, wow. Damn. God bless him. Right? Hey, you know what is worth? He may not have the, like, I don't know how much in terms of like historical knowledge he knows. But man, he is like the my thing. He's the ultimate fan. He's the mega fan, and I like his interviews because he's a fan. he respects the fandom at the same time. He understands the fan. It always comes out great.
He's a fan first, right? He doesn't come off as a fan in terms of like you know being a
the know it all, the pretentious know it all. Yes,
quote unquote mark, right?
Right. He comes in as a forever student, which is how I like to approach things because I come in knowing from my experiences of being an artist to some extent, because there's some similarities that go in. But I'm always approaching and talking to people as if I'm learning from them because I come in not knowing and not needing to know.
My approach is I'm going to have a conversation with this person.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like I'm coming in with the knowledge that I empathize with you because of my experience, but also it's like I'm learning and I'm letting you relax. You're sitting in my virtual coffee table,
and
we're just chilling.
I don't want to say stump them, but make them think, right?
Yeah, that too. You know what? Actually, I'll give credit to as well. Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh yeah, he's great.
I love
great
the way interview. Because it's not really an interview.
That's literally what
it's the art of having a conversation. It's the Bruce Lee thing. It's the art of interviewing without actually interviewing. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know.
And I love that.
Interviews to me are too formulaic. Interviews to me in the back of my head, and I could be wrong, but this is the way that I've always seen them, is person A, the interviewer, is asking the person B, interviewee, and interviewee person B is trying to sell something, right?
Yes.
And oftentimes interviews come off too much like that.
I think if you add a little bit of your personality to it, that plays a factor.
Again, just listen to this Kevin Von Erich interview, because like it's a absolutely story that I don't even talk about too much. It's a really funny story about like little Boris and schoolyard Boris. Let's just say that.
Awesome. Yep. I'm looking forward to it.
Yep. So that's going to come out tomorrow. And then obviously we have the best coming out this weekend. Might even come
also
out
looking forward to that.
We'll see. But I have a lot of work to do, so I got to go. Dax, thank you so much for being part of this. We will be back next week talking all things AEW Dynamite. He's Dax. I'm Boris. Thank you so much for listening. And most importantly, stay tranquilo.